Welcome to Murder with the Misses. I'm Darren.
And I'm Amy. And today we're telling you the story of Mark Winger. Mark was a nuclear engineer living in Florida. He was raised in the Jewish faith and was considered an overall decent man. Around the end of 1987 or early 1988, Mark's brother set up a blind date between Mark and one of his co-workers, operating room tech Donna Brown. Donna was beautiful and caring. When she met Mark, she thought she had found her person, according to her sister. He was attractive, smart, and Jewish to boot. Mark would propose just 6 months later, and the two would marry in March of 1989. Mark got a new job, and they moved to Springfield, Illinois. The couple settled in, and Donna found a job there, and they were both active in the synagogue. The only thing that Donna was missing was kids. She had been told by doctors that she couldn't have children. After 6 years of marriage, a doctor at Donna's hospital came in saying he had a patient that was a teenager and pregnant. She needed to put the baby up for adoption, and he asked if they knew anyone looking to adopt. Donna knew this was meant to be. Mark and Donna started the adoption process, and they brought baby Bailey home on June 1, 1995. Donna thrived as a mother. Her best friend, Deanne Schultz, would come over often and help with Bailey. Donna finally felt complete. In August, Donna took Bailey to Florida to meet her family. The airport was about an hour and a half to 2 hours away from home, so she had to get a ride. Some reports say that her family arranged for her to have a private driver take her home, and some reports say that she took a shuttle, but was the only person in the vehicle. It was a transport company that brought her home, so I will refer to it as a shuttle ride. All the way home, the driver, Roger Harrington, was talking about doing drugs and that he would host parties and invite her to one, and then he had a voice in his head that he named Dom, who would tell him to do bad things like plant car bombs. He was speeding and driving erratically. Once she was safe at home, she told her sister about it and called Mark, who was in Tennessee for work at the time. He told her to write the whole ordeal down in case they needed it, so she did, and she put it on the refrigerator. Then they started getting strange phone calls, so Mark called the shuttle company on August 25th to complain. He even asked to talk to the driver. The shuttle company took Mark's information and gave it to Roger when they suspended him from work. Fast forward to August 29th of 1995, Roger calls 911, and we'll play the call for you. He actually called, and then they ended up calling him back, so it's like two calls in one, but it'll give you an idea of what's going on.
Yeah, and right here's the call. So he says his wife is hurt and he shot the man in the house, but you can hear the man moaning during this call about 35 seconds in.
Yeah, you can hear him in the background.
Yeah, and I mean, he moans quite a few times. I mean, like I said, it's about 35 seconds into that phone call and you can just hear him moaning throughout.
Yeah.
And everything. And then it hangs up and then calls back.
And he's still, I think you can still hear him in the second part too.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, but there's about the timeline where he starts and you can kind of hear it's kind of eerie.
It is eerie. But police and paramedics arrive. Officer Dave Berenger was one of the first officers to arrive on scene, and he happened to have his Polaroid camera with him. So he takes the last three pictures he has of the bodies before paramedics move them to work on them. These would be the only photos that day of the bodies. Mark stayed at the house giving his statement while Donna and the man were rushed to the hospital. The man died shortly after arrival, and Donna died just minutes later. Mark told the cops that he was in the basement running on the treadmill when he heard the baby crying and some thuds from upstairs. He went upstairs to investigate and saw the baby laying alone on the bed in the master bedroom. He could hear noises from the other room, and since they'd been getting weird phone calls, he had started keeping his pistol in the nightstand, so he grabbed his gun and ran down the hall. As he came into the kitchen dining room area, he saw Donna on her knees with the man bent over her, hitting her with a hammer, so Mark shot him in the head. The man fell backward, and Mark almost ran over him, he was going so fast. The man raised his head, and Roger shot him in the head again. Mark checked on the baby, called 911, then rolled Donna over and held her. The man was still moaning, so Mark took the hammer out of his hand and beat him in the chest with it. He said that that hammer was his, and Donna had left it out to remind him to hang a hat rack. When he asked police who the man was, they told him this was Roger Harrington. Mark immediately said, "Oh my God, this guy's been harassing us all week."
And, you know, Roger was no stranger to the cops either. You know, he had run-ins with them before.
Yeah, they were very familiar with Roger. And it's probably because one of the cops who got the case was Detective Cox. Roger and his ex had rented a trailer from him because Cox owned a trailer park in the area. And he had even had to break up a fight between Roger and his wife once, so he knew who he was dealing with. And it made sense to Detective Cox that he would want revenge for losing his job. Roger had been a psychiatric patient with a history of delusions, so Mark was held as a hero. The next day, the county prosecutor said it was clear-cut self-defense, and Donna's family rushed to be with Mark and Bailey. But Cox's partner, Detective Williamson, was not so convinced. Roger's car was parked the wrong way on the street in front of the house. He had a knife and tire iron in it, so why break into the house and hope you find a weapon when you have two right there at your disposal? Also, on the front seat of the car was a note with Mark's name on it, address, and the time 4:30. Like an appointment, not a schedule to break into a house. There was no forced entry, and inside the house on the dining room table was a coffee cup and a pack of cigarettes that were brought in by Roger. It seemed more like a prearranged meeting rather than a break-in and a murder, but the case was closed within 48 hours.
And everyone else, you know, just ignored all this stuff, you know, that shows that he was told to come, you know, to this house. And at this time, you know, he even brought in his own coffee and cigarettes and stuff like that.
Yeah, this looked like a prearranged meeting.
Yeah.
But they chalked it up to him breaking into the house, even though there was no sign of a break-in. And I really highly doubt that if she recognized this man outside of her door, that she would open the door willingly and let him in. Because she was very freaked out by that shuttle ride. It just doesn't make sense. And it's very casual for revenge to schedule a meeting. But
yeah, so, you know, he had the note in the car saying...
Mark's name, address.
Mark's name, address, and at that time.
Yeah.
So it was like, like you said, it was an appointment.
It was definitely an appointment, but they just ignored it. They just went right past
it. That's crazy.
Yep, they just chalked it up to self-defense and went about their day. But a couple of months later, Mark came to the police department asking for his gun back. And that seemed odd. Unless there's some type of sentimental connection to the gun, most victims don't ask for things like that since it's a painful reminder of a tragedy. But they gave it back to him because it's his, and he started asking if they were looking into anything or had anything new. He came in a couple of times asking that, actually. So now even Detective Cox was getting suspicious. Donna's family was helping with Bailey, and Donna's best friend Deanne was helping a lot too. Mark collected life insurance money as well as money from the state's criminal victims compensation program and tried to move on. Almost 5 months after the murders, Mark hired a nanny to move in and help with Bailey full-time. This was Rebecca Simic, and she came in January of 1996. Deanne had a hard time with that, but did help train Rebecca on Bailey's routine, like her likes and dislikes. And only months after moving in, Mark got Rebecca pregnant. Mark left his Jewish faith behind and started going to a Christian church with Rebecca. When his rabbi asked him about the change, Mark told him Judaism is just too difficult and unforgiving. When Rabbi asked what he needed forgiveness for, Mark didn't answer.
Well, we all know what he needed forgiveness for.
Yeah, we do.
And, you know, he went as far as to switch religions to get it.
Yeah, he felt he needed to do that. Well, Mark and Rebecca eloped in Hawaii. In December of 1996, Mark told Donna's family that he was selling the house and building one out in the country. Then he sent them a letter saying that Donna's mom couldn't be called grandma anymore. And the ties were cut. Donna's family still sent a birthday card to Bailey every year. Mark and Rebecca would go on to have three kids together. But let's backtrack a little bit. In December of 1995, about 4 months after the murders, Mark had filed a lawsuit against the transportation company that Roger worked for because he said they shouldn't have hired him in the first place because he was too dangerous. If you have secrets, you really shouldn't get greedy, okay? Because you can't expect to file a lawsuit against a big company and expect them not to do their own investigation. And they did. They too felt like things just didn't add up. But it wasn't until early of 1999 that best friend Deanne came to the police with an interesting secret. She told them that her and Mark had started having an affair about a month before the murders and for several months after. He told her that it would be easier if Donna died. He talked about having her be the one to find the body. But then the shuttle ride happened, and he started saying he had to get that guy in the house. The day of the murders, he asked her if she would love him no matter what. Early in 1996, he took a trip to Africa, and when he got back, he ended their relationship. And that year started her spiral. She attempted to end her life four times, and even took electroshock therapy. She went into a severe depression. Mark did admit to the affair, but not to planning the murders. The police pulled out the case files and came across the three Polaroids. They noticed that the way the bodies were laying did not match up to Mark's story, and a new story was starting to emerge. They figure that once the shuttle ride happened, he started planning. That he made contact with Roger and told him to come to the house. People close to Roger say that he wouldn't have just went over there, but he would have went if Mark had asked him to. Also, Roger's roommate heard him on the phone making plans to meet someone and writing down the details. The detectives believe that he shot Roger and Donna heard the noise, laid the baby on the bed and ran in, probably concerned for Mark's safety, the son of a bitch, and then he hit her with a hammer no less than 7 times. Called 911, but Roger was still alive and started moaning, so Mark told the 911 operator that the baby was crying and he had to hang up, and then he shot Mark again.
There was a neighbor that said that he heard a single shot around 4:30, which was just after the 911 call was placed.
Right. So that would put almost 40 minutes in between the first shot and second shot.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's a big gap.
Also, it does not line up with Mark's story because he said he shot him and was still running, almost running him over when he leaned his head up and Mark had to shoot him again.
Yeah, which would be within seconds.
Immediate,
yeah, yes. Which would be within seconds.
Yep, absolutely. The attorneys for the shuttle company had hired a blood spatter expert. They note that there was a clean spot on Mark's hand that could have been where he was holding the hammer. Mark had said in one of his stories that he had so much blood on him and his clothes because he had cradled Donna before police got there. But experts said that the blood on his clothes was spattered, not smeared, as it would be if he had held her. Plus, the Polaroid showed that she was laying face down on the floor, so maybe he doesn't know how to cradle someone? There were very few spots of Donna's blood on Roger, which they believe only transferred onto him when Mark hit him in the chest with the hammer after Donna had been hit. All of this comes out to the public, and Mark dropped the lawsuit against the shuttle company, but it was too late. He opened a can of worms, and the authorities went fishing. He gets arrested August 23rd of 2001 and is set a $10 million bond. He asked an old childhood friend for the bond money because this guy was rich now, but the friend said, no. Co-workers even testified that when they were in Tennessee for work and Mark got the call from Donna about the shuttle ride, instead of going home, he stayed an extra 2 days unnecessarily. And even said out loud while he was there that he wondered what would happen to the baby if Donna died.
This man is, you know, he's not smart and obviously didn't care that Donna was, you know, so upset. You know, he just saw an opportunity. That's all it was.
Yeah, and he seized it. Ugh, gross. Now, Deanne did testify in exchange for immunity. Prosecutors brought in pathologist Travis Hindman, who said that the autopsy showed that Roger's bullet wounds did not match Mark's story. He only found small amounts of blood on Roger's right palm and index finger, and a little on his left hand. There was no blood on a ring or watch that he was wearing. So he said that there was no way that Roger could have killed Donna. Tom Bevel, the president of TBI, which is a consulting company specializing in bloodstain pattern analysis and crime scene reconstruction, testified that based on the evidence, Mark shot Roger in the top of the head, then beat Donna, and then at some point rolled Roger over and shot him again in the forehead. The jury deliberated for 13 hours before coming to a unanimous decision. Guilty of premeditated murder and sentenced to life without parole, so natural life. He tried several different things to try to get a retrial or new testing, but he was always denied.
And it doesn't stop there.
Oh no, there's more. In the summer of 2005, a fellow inmate turned over a 19-page letter that Mark had written trying to get him to help find a hitman to kill Deanne and the rich guy that wouldn't give him the $10 million. In exchange for a transfer to a less restrictive prison, he even wore a wire and had an almost hour-long conversation with Mark about it. When authorities asked Mark about it, he said he didn't really mean it. They were just fantasies. So they added 35 more years to his sentence for good measure. And he also lost yard privileges for a year. Now, when you're in a place where you're in your cell for 23 hours a day and only get to go outside once, losing your outside privileges is difficult.
Yeah, especially for a year.
For a year.
Yeah, so I mean, he's basically in solitary confinement.
But when you use your 1 hour of yard time to try to find a hitman, what do?
Yeah.
You lose that privilege. Get over it. But after a year of not being able to exercise outside of his cell, he filed an appeal. He likes to file a lot of different lawsuits and things, so he spent a lot of time in the courts. But he was moved to another prison, and his yard time was restored. So the poor guy survived a harrowing ordeal. I know that yard time is important for physical and mental reasons, but when you brutally murder two people, I lose my ability to give a fuck if you can go outside or not. I mean, the cop who took the Polaroid pictures now brings a camera to every crime scene. Donna's family established a fund in her memory for abused women. Rebecca divorced Mark. Good job. Bailey is an adult now and does see Donna's side of the family. And Mark is back in his cell for his mandatory 23 hours a day. And that's where we stop.
Yeah, that's just crazy, you know, that he went to this length just to, I mean...
To what? Like, what?
Just
why?
Just to get rid of her? I mean, why not just divorce her?
I mean...
Why not just part ways?
And you can say, you know, maybe it was a religious angle, like maybe they don't really like divorce in Judaism. I'm not too familiar with that side of it, but I'm pretty sure they really don't like murder either.
No, that's why he had to switch religions.
He's like, okay, yeah, let's go to this one where I can ask for forgiveness and be okay. Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah.
But they said that, like, right before the family cut ties with him, or he cut ties with the family, like, they had her, and they were holding Bailey, and they had a necklace that had they just said a likeness to Donna, and they were going to put it on her, and they were like, Mark was like, get it off, don't put that on her. I mean, he was really weird about it, and so they really knew that it was coming, that he was about to cut ties. But they tried to stay in her life this whole entire time. And she sees that. She knows.
Yeah, and I don't understand that. You know, it's just like, you know, whenever a kid is brought into a family, you know, why cut? I mean, you already got that family used to them.
Well, that was their adoptive daughter, so that was their grandchild.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So why would you take that away from them?
Yeah. And even when Rebecca came in, because she's really nice too, when she came in, she said that she just felt so bad for this poor baby because she had lost two mothers back to back. And I know she was too young to remember that, but at the same time, she's going to know about it when she gets older, that she literally lost two mothers immediately, within months of each other. And that's so sad.
Yeah.
But she's a very happy adult, and I think she's doing okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we thank you guys for joining us on this one. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow.
Tell your friends.
Yep. See you guys next time.
Bye.